It seems like the Aretz has like a mind of its own.
Who?
The Aretz, the land.
The land has a mind of its own?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. In Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Yeah.
The Rashi, Eich Peri.
Yeah.
So it says, Sheitam Ha'etz Ketam Ha'Pri, He Lo Asasakim. And the land didn't do what it was supposed to do.
The Rashi says that it means what? That the tree itself should have the taste of fruit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Eight free share ye hey tam ha eight to tam a free. Then okay. So that's how Rashi learns, because it says eight free. Osef free. And it seems to be pretty straightforward from the language.
Right, so Rashi says that the land didn't do that. It didn't make the trees like they were supposed to taste.
Right. The land didn't do that. Ella Batote are eight Osef free. Do you see a distinction? Everything is very precise in the Torah. Below a bridge. The Sichas Keshenaskalo Adam Alavono, Niskadagan He Alavono, Niskalo. But the way the question is, the question is that how could this be? Now you're raising the question that it's attributing some type of a will, disobedience to the land. As though the land could be accused of being disobedient. Is that the question?
Yeah. It also appears later on in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Hold it a second. Perek Yud Aleph?
Yeah.
Hello, it's Bar. Bavona. The Gambazu, Osipo Lachto. Rashi over here is, going further. I mean, it's just treating the earth as though the earth sinned, bavona, it sinned. And here too, it continued to sin. Increased its sin, continued to sin. So now it's referring to the earth as something which has the capacity to sin. Okay. Alright. That's it. Anything further on the question?
What did the ground do wrong and get off?
Yeah, here?
Yeah.
Apparently, good point. So what did the ground do? The ground opened its mouth. That's what the puzzle says.
To receive the blood?
To receive the blood. So we have to assume that this means that Hevel was buried beneath the ground.
That it absorbed.
Hold one second. There's two different ideas. I mean, if you're saying that he was slain and his blood was spilled on the ground, and then it simply got, it simply became absorbed in the ground. Is that what it's saying? Seems to be that he buried him there.
I mean, he opened up the ground to put that Havilah in.
Well, the way I understood it in a natural, a deep investigation, it seems to me that after he killed him, he buried him.
So then the ground didn't do anything.
No.
Right.
That's always my assumption. It just seems to be that way from the fact that the part of the crime entailed the burial. I always learned that there were two aspects to the crime. And you see it from the Pesukim that there were two aspects to the crime. One aspect was the crime itself. But the next thing was the denial, the belief, the distortion of reality, the distortion of God. The fact that he thought he could get away with it, that he could hide the crime, the hiding of the crime. That's why you see that when God first confronts him, so he says, well, you got me. I don't know. So then God says that the cold man, he says, so Akim, Eli, Minhu Adama. They cry out to me from the Adama. So that means that he was in the ground, underground, so to speak. I just assumed that, and also the punishment of Cain had to do with the ground. somehow or other, that was part of the, that was included, that idea was included by the fact that he was cursed, the curse that the ground, that the earth rather, the earth would not give forth its power to him. He wouldn't be successful in tilling the soil. And that had a lot to do with his makeup. The fact that that was part of the punishment had a lot to do with his makeup. He was a farmer, and the fact that there was a defect in his carbon, and there was a defect in his whole relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. But my assumption then was that when it says the land, we need a land which opened its mouth. Well, what does that prove? The Jews simply said the land. The fact that the land had opened its mouth and had received the body, so to speak, what does that have to do with the punishment of Cain? That's irrelevant. The Jews simply said the land. And that's the punishment because he placed all of his confidence in his ability to work the soil. So that now you have to live in a different kind of a state.
Right, man?
Yes. See what I said, even though it was saints?
Yeah.
Intermingled. One is David's question, the basic question. How can the Torah speak this way? It boggles the mind that everybody recognized the difference between the earth, between matter, and between beings that have life in them. Even an animal we would really attribute sin to, because we associate sin with the power of Bechira. But even beyond Bechira, it requires a certain amount of awareness, of knowledge, of understanding. So certainly the idea that the earth could sin in the sense that it rebelled against God's command is mind-boggling. Also, the idea that the earth sinned, continued to sin, in opening its mouth, so to speak, to receive the body or the blood of Cain, what does that mean? And it was punished for that. All right, if you want to discuss that, what do you guys have in mind? This is a challenging one. The earth opening its mouth. Does anybody get this type of an explanation? Yeah, I'm taking a look at the Ramban here. Ramban, the Tam, I should put the Sia. Lamar, Ata Rakta Sachicha. You killed your brother. You can see the Dama by Dama. And you covered his blood in the ground. That's what the Ramban says. That's basically what I was saying. Any exile, Aleha. And I will decree upon it that it will reveal, uncover its blood, and it will no longer cover up the killers. Because you will be cursed through it. And everything that you will try to cover over it. The Gaon has Riyah of Anitiyah. That's Rinshin Pshat. The planting of seeds and trees. V'zeh Onesh Kal Shvichas Dam Ba'aret. And this is the punishment of anyone who spills blood in the land. V'inyin Shekosef Yadam Hu Yachinef Es Ha'aret. V'chanuf Es Ha'aret Ma'ara V'peiroseha. Alright. In other words, Ramban is making a bigger point out of this. Trying to explain the connection between the two. But in doing so, he's kind of addressing the problem over here. In an indirect way. But there's a reason why he received this type of a punishment. And it has to do with the faith. connected to the chayv, mida connected mida. Okay, but the question is, are we going to deal with this issue? I mean, I got to get a sense from the group.
Why is Rashi? Why does it not start with a kodesh is elachem?
Right.
So he says it didn't because of kach masa higid lamo lachis lam nachas goyim. So basically, because people are going to come and say that we stole Eretz Yisrael, so we can go back and say no, that Hashem created the world and He gave it to us, right?
Right.
But he says that's why you need everything up to the Chodesh Zelachem. But you really only need Sefer Bereishis for that, because who cares about our whole history? Once Hashem created the world, He could just say, okay, now Bnei Yisrael gets the land, and that's it. I mean, history is good, but the question is basically presupposing that this isn't a history book. So all you need to do is say God created the world, and then He can do whatever He wants. And Sefer Bereishis, the first half of Sefer Bereishis is necessary, and everything after that is really extra. And another related question, which is that I wouldn't say Koach Masav is really the obvious answer, you know, to say that it's because, to tell Sewillah Tzvang to answer the Goyim. I would say the real answer is because, you know, we are created to gain knowledge of God, and through studying Parshas Bereishis, and moreover through studying Sefer Bereishis, you know, the lessons, the knowledge of God contained therein, and the lessons contained therein, will allow us to reach a higher level of Yedias Hashem. That's why it's there. Mm-hmm. Because it's there to help us reach a level of perfection too, not just to keep halacha.
Well, that's the answer. That's you just answered your own question.
Yeah,
because
but
that's the whole idea.
That.
That's the whole point of
this. So we can answer
God. Obtain knowledge of God. But how will mankind obtain knowledge of God?
Yeah, but Rashi says where it's here, so we can answer the Goyim.
I'm sorry.
Rashi says it's there, so we can answer the Goyim.
Yeah, well, that's the point. The point is that that this is all included in the plan of Maaseh Bereishis. That Maaseh Bereishis is for an objective, and the objective is for the entire world to have Yedias Hashem. And included in that is the idea of Eretz Yisrael. That Eretz Yisrael was included in the plan of creation.
What does that have to do with Listematem?
I'm sorry?
What does that have to do with Listematem?
Well, Listematem is true.
So,
you see that that's very relevant.
Listematem, you need like five
questions. As far as that, it's something which is happening every day in our own time. The denial of our right to Eretz Yisrael. That is to say, it's a very good idea. You see from this that the idea of Klal Yisrael and the idea of Eretz Yisrael is incorporated into the very fabric of Bereishis, of creation. And
is the question where we're going to answer the Goyim? Is that the question that Rashi's asking?
No, Rashi's asking the question
that
the way the Torah begins with Bereishis.
Right, so is he saying so we'll be able to answer the Goyim?
I'm sorry?
His answer is we'll be able to answer the Goyim when he say that we stole Eretz Yisrael, right?
I'm not going into the, practically speaking, but it's the concept, it's the
right.
idea.
That would require one pasuk.
He can't take everything literally.
He gave it to us.
I'm sorry, what?
That requires one pasuk to answer them. You say God created the world and He gave it to us. In fact, just say break
no,
the
but that's
world
not an answer. Excuse me. I don't know what you're talking about. That's not an answer.
Why
that's not?
Not
the answer, because there's more to it. That's not the that's true, but it's only a part of the answer. The answer, there's no point in giving an answer that is not going to be effective. The real answer is because this is part of creation. It's part of the scheme of creation. You said it yourself. You said it well.
Oh, so you're saying it's not
that's
really
the purpose. The objective is for all of mankind to have Yedias Hashem. That's all included in Sheish Yemei Bereishis. And when God created the world, He didn't just create the physical world.
Right.
He created the world in accordance with the purpose. And the purpose is that all of mankind should be should come to the objective of creation, of Yedias Hashem. And in order to how is that going to happen? So in order for that to happen, there has to be a Klal Yisrael. So the nations of the world should have an understanding of what Klal Yisrael is. And then the listematem means that there's a relationship of animosity. So it's been that way, that as soon as God gave the Torah, at Sinai, Sinai is related to the word Sinah. Yisham yata Sinah l'chala olam. That hatred was created at Sinai. But that's because of a tremendous misunderstanding. And that is to say that it depends how you look at it. If you look at it, that the Jews are usurpers. That the Jews...
Oh, that's a nice idea.
That the Jews, right, that the Jews are an elite group. That's been the charge throughout all of history, that they separate themselves from mankind. Exactly, you see the reality of this charge in many ways, not just with regard to the land of Israel, that you see. So it's all part of an overriding attitude towards the Jews. It's a tremendous hatred for the Jews, and a complete distortion. The distortion is that you are really our enemy. That has been in every case, whether it's Christianity. Christianity claims that we killed their God.
Right,
man. Exactly. What?
I don't know. I think a lot of people in this room don't really know exactly what you're saying.
What do you know?
I mean, I think it's a really nice idea, but I don't. Yeah.
Well, they don't understand it.
How do you get it from Rashi? Like Rashi mentioned nothing of the ideas of Hashem. It seems totally like just refuting a claim. Like,
Cobra's always.
I don't get where the ideas of Hashem comes in Rashi.
Where that's in play.
He says that Koch Masov, that the whole purpose, what is the purpose of this account? The whole purpose of this account is to teach mankind about the fundamentals. That's the entire foundation of the Torah. You can't start the Torah simply with the laws, with the Achor Yisrael Lachem. That's Lachem. You say that's where the Torah should have started. Achor Yisrael Lachem. But that would be missing a tremendous point over here. That the Torah begins with knowledge which is vital to all of mankind, not just the Jews, and that is Koach Masov. That is to say, the fundamentals, at least, of Yediyas Hashem.
Right, but he's saying it in terms of the land, not necessarily in terms of...
I'm trying to explain that, trying to broaden the idea. You have to open your mind, and if you look at it in a childish kind of a way, it's not going to make sense. That is, he's showing his power, so therefore, he owns everything. He gave it to the Jews, and that's it. Don't complain. So that doesn't satisfy us. It doesn't really explain much. But if you broaden it, if you see the deeper meaning levels of the idea, it makes a lot of sense. That's what Yosef was saying, that that it's more than just telling you my deeds, my power. It's what's the purpose of that? The purpose is that everybody, all of mankind, should come to a recognition that there's a phenomenon of creation, that we exist because of creation, that there's a creator. And that through an appreciation of all the chachma that's embodied in the creation, we can get to a yediyah. So you see that there's two things in Bereishis. I mean, this Rashi is telling you that there's two things, a very important point. You can deduce it from this Rashi, that it's not merely describing the physical phenomena of creation. That's the way it would seem to be on the surface. The sun, the moon, the sea, the animals, the physical phenomena. But above and beyond, it's also telling you that there's a purpose in creation. And the purpose is for mankind to have Yediyas Hashem. Yeah, but again, what was included in creation were those elements which would fulfill the purpose, the elements that would lead mankind to a fulfillment of the purpose. And incorporated in Sheikh Shemei Bereishis was the phenomenon of Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rashi is basically pointing out. And the phenomenon of Eretz Yisrael and the Jewish people, it's all one idea. That when God relates to Klal Yisrael, and God establishes Klal Yisrael, and God gives them Eretz Yisrael, all the phenomenon that occurred with regard to the Jewish people, I was interrupted before you, I was beginning to expand upon the fact that you see the idea of listen is not just listen on one particular. The idea, even the accusation of listen has a broader base. It's part of a greater, a larger universal. And that is that the Jewish people are the enemies of mankind. That's the more universal. You see that in every expression of anti-Semitism, that the Jews are the enemy. That's what the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, and throughout all of history, they always depicted the Jew as being someone who is at what's in the Megillah. Mefuzah u'mefurad. They're separate from all the people, and their objective is to destroy the world and to take over for themselves. That's the way they looked at the Jew. But thus I am shonos b'kolam. They don't blend in, they don't contribute, they're not productive. To the contrary, they're separate and they're parasitical. That's basically what Paro said. It's amazing if you go through all of the examples of the attitude towards the Jews, the anti-Semitic attitude. It's basically saying the same thing, that the Jews are an elite group and they separate themselves and they want to destroy and take over. It's really a projection of what the anti-Semites themselves would like to do, but that's irrelevant. The truth, the truth of the matter is that it's to the contrary. For example, it's like, sukkahs. Sukkahs is a chag in which they bring 70 karbanos. You know, they brought karbanos, which represents the concern for all of mankind. So the Chazal, let's say, that if the Goyim knew how beneficial the Beit HaMikdash was for them, they would have surrounded it with 70 legions to protect it. There's a complete distortion over here. And the Rashi over here is telling you that that Korach Maso, that everybody is supposed to be involved in this knowledge, and that will come about through the Jewish people and through the fact that they have Eretz Yisrael. It's all part of the plan, and that plan is already incorporated in Sheish Medrashis. It's to the contrary, that the selection of the Jews and the giving of the land was not just for the Jews, but was really for the kingdom of the entire world. So that's a beautiful idea.
Yeah, it's a really nice idea.
Yeah, so what's the problem? Do the guys understand it?
Yeah, so you're just saying that the fact that he states it in terms of Eretz Yisrael, that's just a particular, like, as part of a huge, as part of a huge whole, like, I'm just wondering, like, the way that you're saying it, I understand how he's saying that through Klal Yisrael, then all this stuff comes about, but I was just bothered by the fact that he states it through, focusing on Eretz Yisrael.
Then why Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah,
I think Eretz Yisrael is the main focal point. That is, it's not just, why single out just Eretz Yisrael and list them out then? What about all the other persecutions of the Jews, all the other arguments against the Jews? But this seems to be the fundamental, that when the Jews come back and they have control of the land, that's when the hatred reaches its greatest level. It's ironic because when the Zionists were involved in trying to establish Eretz Yisrael, the land, the Jews should return to land, they presented it as a solution to anti-Semitism. It's an amazing kind of thing. But they said that all kinds of distortions, because these were secular Jews, they weren't really rooted in principles of Torah. As they didn't understand the real basis of anti-Semitism. They couldn't understand it because they wanted to say that the Jews are like anybody else, that there's nothing unique about the Jews. They were trying to deny their own Jewishness. But it's amazing if you read the writings of the Zionists, that one of the main arguments was that this would bring an end to anti-Semitism. The truth is that it's one of those powerful forces in terms of generating anti-Semitism. The whole world can't tolerate the idea that the Jews have returned to the land. Why is the world obsessed with this land? And Jerusalem, the significance is a little tiny nothing. I mean, you take a look at the entire peninsula over there, a tremendous amount of land, and all the resources, the oil, everything was given to the Arabs. And the whole world focuses on this little tiny sliver of land. But this is really, I guess, it's symbolically the most powerful thing, that the Jews return to their land. That's a vindication that the Jews, throughout history, by the way, the Church, the Catholic Church more than any other institution, they use the exile. They claim that this shows that God has discarded the Jews. That that's the justification of their cause, that the Jews have been discarded. And the proof is that they're in exile. How could it be that they're in exile? That's why the Navi says in Yechezkel, I believe, that the Jew being in exile is a tremendous chil Hashem, because everybody says that they claim to be God's people, and here they are. How could it be that they're in exile from their land? Which is, it could be. I mean, the truth is that that's a punishment. But in terms of the world, it's like a chil Hashem. Hold on. So I guess, the idea of the Church, the Chil Hashem, that they maintain that the Jew being in exile was a proof that the Jew had been discarded. That's why when the Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael, the Catholic Church couldn't deal with them. They, for years, they wouldn't, I don't know if they recognize it today, maybe it's slowly changing, but originally, they were vehemently opposed. They never would recognize Israel. Because, theologically, it destroyed their entire foundation. But this, their framework, that was the proof. The exile was the proof that the Jews were finished, that they were discarded as God's chosen people. So therefore, if they come back to the land, so that means that they were wrong. They'd have to acknowledge that they were wrong. Anyways, so the listim atem is the main taina that they're seized. That they don't have any rights to the land, but I think personally that it's rooted in this universal. You see that it's all part of the claim of Listim, that the Jews are thieves, and that the Jews essentially, well, the idea of seed is very, very strong. If the Jews are parasites, that's what the Nazis call them. And that's what Farah said, that they're just basically exploiting our, you know, creation, what we do, and they're going to destroy us. They're a parasitical type of people. Whatever, we don't have to go into all the charges. But in that light, this is a very beautiful idea, that the answer is that when people come to a recognition, a true recognition of what the Jews are and what Eretz Yisrael is, that it's really God's land, that's gracious. I create, you know, just like I create heaven and earth, so too I create Eretz Yisrael. It's God's land. And the Jews are simply the people that I've designated to achieve the objective of Eretz Yisrael, which is an objective for all of mankind. It's the exact opposite, that the Jewish people exist for the benefit of mankind. Then this tiny will be removed. So that's very, very important. That if people study Bereishis and they recognize the lessons that are contained in Bereishis, if all people will study that, so then this will achieve the objective of removal of the taina of listamata. And therefore the Rashi is perfect. Because if you're going to look at the Torah merely as being the sefer, which, you know, gives the Torah, basically, the laws, the system. If you can look at the Torah as being simply a account of the system, so it should begin with the mitzvah. But Rashi is saying that there would be lacking in terms of the Torah, in terms of the whole system, would be lacking unless you had Bereishis. Because the entire system and the Matan Torah and giving it to the Jews and Eretz Yisrael is all part of a broader picture, which is Bereishis. All that is incorporated into Bereishis. So that's a perfect explanation. That all of mankind will study the Torah, and they'll all study Maisa Bereishis, and they'll all realize what the objective is, and then they won't have a tie against the Jews. To the contrary. To the contrary, not list them, but the benefactors of mankind. That's the way it ought to be. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the question. You know, I don't know how much time we're going to have. We're going to break for and the other question, I don't know how many other questions were there. I always like to hear the questions and then decide which one to take up now or later. You can write down your questions if you haven't stated them yet. Let's get back to David's question. Because it's very challenging in terms of how to address a medrash, a midrashic statement, which, if you take it literally, it creates tremendous problems. On the other hand, if you're not going to take it literally, so what is, you know, what's the metaphor? What is the idea that it's alluding to? Two ideas, the two illustrations of the earth spinning. They don't seem to be identical. The first case is where it was supposed to be a tree, and the earth brought forth something else. That's one idea. The other one is that it opened its mouth, so to speak. That doesn't seem to be any disobedience over there. It's just that's part of its natural endowment, its natural characteristics. Is that that's what earth is, you know. It can be utilized to cover up. You can bury things in the earth. And where's the rebellion of the earth over there? That's a little bit more difficult to see. These are the questions, two different questions I would ask. In terms of bringing forth eight osepri instead of eight free, so then, you know, the question is, the idea doesn't seem to make any sense. It would be the earth decided it wasn't going to listen to God. What kind of thing is that? In the other case, if there's no decision, there doesn't seem to be any rebellion. It's just that once the earth was given certain properties, and it has the properties that it can serve as something to bury things in, so where's the rebelliousness? There I don't see what the point is. I don't see where the earth is spinning. It's like throwing something, it's like throwing a body into the ocean and it sinks to the bottom. I mean, so the water is spinning. That's the character of water.
In other words, Hevel, Kain is more cursed.
Right.
So,
does it say more? Or at min in the sense that it's more?
Is it more? Is that what it is?
Or is it in the sense that from?
More.
More? Who translates that more?
Yoser. Rashi says Yoser. Yoser Mimash and Eskala Lahi is Gavar.
No. Well, Rashi, what does Rashi mean? Yoser Mimash. No. Excuse me. Min. Arata Min Adama over there. I don't think it means more. But you have Rashi saying Yoser. I think that means that that Adam was already, the ground was already cursed, so to speak. The ground was already cursed in the first case.
So it means you're cursed more than causing the
ground? Ar Adama, Arur Adama, Baruch, right? That was the punishment of Adam. That the ground will be cursed because of you, B'Yisrael and Tochvara, Pardim Echayecha. That was part of the original curse, that the ground was the punishment of Adam for his sake. So now, I think Rashi is coming to explain. So what is the curse to the Kayan? The land has already been cursed. So how is he any different? It seems like a repetition. It's a repetition of the curse that was given to Adam. So Rashi is saying, Yosef. It doesn't make sense unless you say that it's specific. That is, that there's a general klala and a specific. There was one klala which applies to all of mankind. That was the first curse. That, you know, kot v'dardar tatmiyafah. That was the curse of kot v'dardar. That Adam Harishon, we should try and differentiate between the two curses. Because both apply to the land. The first one was essentially kot v'dardar. The tzavon tochlena. Kol yimei chayecha. With the tzavon, you know, some type of suffering or depression, whatever you want to say. And what was the curse of Kayan then? That's the question. Now, how was the land cursed with regard to the chait of Kayan? Any differently than it was already cursed? But that's what Rashi is trying to say. That it was cursed even Yoser. And if you go into the Ramban explains a bit what it means that, the Rambam is a nice Ramban, and Vayihi Bona Ir. He says that Kayan built the city, Vayihi Bona Ir. So, on the surface, it seems to be strange, because the curse was that he'd be constantly a nomad. He'd be moving from place to place. And he wouldn't be able to be successful or to be permanent in any place. So then how is it say that he built the city? That seems to be a great achievement. It seems to be contrary to the entire curse. So the Ramban explains, very interesting, it's beautiful in the formulation of the sentence. It should have said that he built the city. Vayivanir. Why doesn't it say Vayivanir? He built the city. Why is it stated in the present tense? Vayi, and he was a bona ir. He was a building. And he is a builder. It's like in the present tense. He was always building.
What pasuk are you on?
I don't have the chumash, hold it. No, I put it down when the phone rang. Perek Dalid. Perek Dalid. Perek Dalid. Yud Zayin. Vayeda Kain Es Ishto Vatar Vatelid Es Chanoch. Vayi Bona Ir. And he was a builder of a city. Not that he built the city, but he was a builder of a city. He was a Bona Ir. He was one who built the city. Now that's a strange formulation. This is Vayikra Shem Ha'ir to Shem Beno Chanoch. And he named the city Chanoch, I guess, because it's Shem Beno Chanoch. Interesting. So the Shiv also said he just what he called the city, what the name was. But he says he called it Shem Beno Chanoch. All this is very interesting. See, he didn't name it after himself. He named it after his son Chanoch. There's a very fascinating Ramban on it. He'll turn to the Ramban. Now, I told you, the Ramban doesn't raise these questions that I raise in an open, direct way, but it's implied if you read his commentary. It says, but from the start, he thought that he'd be alone because of his sin. would appear that he didn't think he'd even get married and have children. But then he did. I guess he didn't know all the ramifications. The curse was a general curse, Nova, Nodia, Baaretz, and so on and so forth. But God didn't spell out every particular, how it's going to affect his life in every particular way. So the Ramban is saying that at the beginning he thought he'd be completely alone. But then he had children. So I guess he experimented to see how far it would go. That would it mean that he'd be a riri, that he'd be childless? He'd be alone and childless? Well, he found out that he had children. So once he found out that he had a child, Hochel Livno's ear. He began to build a city, Leos Beno Yoshe's bar, so that his son could dwell in it. Uvavur Tihu Arur, and because he was cursed, Umasav Lo Yaslichu, and that was the curse, that his actions would not be successful. Karau Chanov. He called the city Chanov. It's interesting. The Kriya Shem, if you see the Kriya Shem over here, is very important. The Torah doesn't have anything superfluous. On the surface, like, why do we care that he called it Chanov? But the Ramban is saying, Lahagid, Yilo Bono Le Atmo, to make known that he did not build the city for himself. Tihu Emo Ir, Umoshav Baret, because he did not have any city and permanent settlements in the land. He Nova Nadu. That was the entire curse. He was Nova Nadu. That means to say that he was a Nod is from Nidui. That means to be alone, separate. And Nora is to be nomadic, to be constantly moving. Avoliya Habinyan L'chanoch. But the city was L'shem Chanoch. Look, Ilu Chanoch Bono L'nafsho. And it's as though Chanoch took it for himself. L'mitnei Shalom Omar V'yivin here. And since it did not say, and he built the city, Kasha Yomar V'yivin Asinvei, Vayivnu b'nei God as Sivon. In other places in the Torah where it's describing that how certain people built something, that's the expression that it employs, Vayivan. So over here it should have simply said Vayivan. It doesn't say that. It says Yoreh Bihoyo Koyam of Bonair. Ah, it's a beautiful shot. It says Vayihi Bonair. That was what he was. He was a Bonair all of his days. He was involved in building the city. Why? Himas of Arurim, because his works were cursed. Yivne Ma'at, the Torah for Amo. He built a little bit with tremendous exertion and effort. Then the Anua, the Yanod, Minamakamahu. Then he would have to leave that place. The Yachosham, and he'd return. The Yivne Ma'at, Velo Yashliach Esbracha. So it fits in, it answers the question. Even though he doesn't raise it as a question, but you could raise it as a question that how did he succeed in building a city? Seems to contradict the entire curse, which meant that he'd be utter, that he would be a failure, he wouldn't be successful, even with regard to tilling of the soil, and that he'd be constantly moving, and he'd be a stranger and an exile. So there he says, you see, the Pasuk expressed it beautifully, that the two ideas come together, that he didn't build the city for himself, because he knew that couldn't succeed. But once he saw that it wasn't contrary to God's will that he would have a child, because at first he thought that he wouldn't have a child. Then when he had a child, he learned something about the deeper, different idea about the curse, that it would not preclude having a child. So he thought that as far as the child is concerned, that the child would have a city. So he built the city not for himself, but for the child. That's why he called it Hishem Ben Ochanoch, to make it clear that he wasn't doing this for himself. So that it should not fall under the curse, that it would be unsuccessful. Nevertheless, insofar as this was an expression of his ma'asim and his hatzlacha, and that was apparently part of the curse, that he would not be masliach, that everything would be, he'd have to put a tremendous amount of effort into everything, and he could never really achieve anything which would appear to the person like some kind of a success. He'd be a failure. And that really gives us an insight now into the what Rashi is saying, that the land was cursed additional to the curse of Adam. But the curse of Adam was not that he would be a failure in tilling the soil. The curse of Adam in the state of Gan Eden, so there was no curse at all. The earth gave forth all of its fruits, and he didn't have to sweat. There was no sweat of the brow. It was simply la'avdo b'shamra. It was a very easy kind of a thing. Everything was. He had to work it. He had to preserve it. But it was easy. It's just like the system is all set up. Everything works smoothly, and you just have to make sure that nothing is ignored. that nothing is neglected. That's one kind of a job. It's an easy kind of a job. But as long as you do what you have to do, you can be assured of your success. So there's no aggravation. Now it's a different thing. Now there's aggravation. Because you have to till the soil and you have to be concerned about weather conditions, and that's all aggravation. Even if you have good soil, sometimes there's a storm. Even in Florida, sometimes there's the oranges because the weather gets cold, and nothing is perfect. So farmers, even if they're successful, but it's not smooth, it's not guaranteed. There's all, you know, they have to get up early in the morning and be concerned about the right seasons and then the fertilizer and all the different factors come into the picture. If they do it right, then they could be successful. But there's no decree that they can't, that they're bound to failure. See, the worst thing in life in terms of a koala is if a person, even if a person has a hard job and it's very difficult and so on and so forth, but at least in the end, you experience some type of satisfaction. That's the most important thing. Some type of satisfaction, some type of a feeling of success. But to be working all your life and struggling and struggling and struggling and never really experiencing any kind of success, that seems to be the koala over here. Very serious type of a koala. So that's why Rashi says this was specific to Cain, a separate hashgacha, because this was not part of the general character of the curse. That is to say that with him, he would not be successful. He'd have to work very, very hard, and just basically minimal, so he doesn't starve, so he can keep body and soul together. But he won't experience the feeling of success. And you see that that's the way the Ramban explains the bone ear. That's why the prophet says, yeah, that's true. He did have the opportunity to have a city put up, but it's by Ibona here. Even with regard to that, that was part of the Ashkafa. That his Maisim would be Makulo. See, that Ramban gives you an insight into the general. But Rashi is saying that the land was cursed even more. Okay, now as far as the basic question, I'll just leave you with a thought that David raised. Because this is something from years and years ago, but... Before he even started the yeshiva, right? Kate and I were having a discussion. I still remember it. We were going for a ride somewhere, and we just happened to be discussing this very point, this Rashi. I don't know that Kate ever gave shear on it. I remember he threw out an idea which seemed to me to make a lot of sense in trying to explain this idea of rebellion. And it's just an opening. That's all I'm going to present it at that. And I don't really have that much of an explanation with regard to the second case, where the sin, so to speak, by accepting the body. But with regard to the first one that David raised, that God commanded an eighth tree osapri, and the earth gave forth eight osapri, the rebellion, the concept basically was that in understanding Bereshit, in understanding Masa Bereshit, there are two things that you have to understand. One is the blueprint. We have that a little bit of that idea in a different life, in a different sense. You know, if you go to the first account and the second account. The first account is Hashem, and which is considered to be Midat Hadid. The second account is Hashem Elokim, which is Midat Harachanim. And the way I can explain that, and not that he didn't explain that in conjunction with this point, I'm just bringing it out, maybe it'll help a little bit, is that the first account really represents the absolute truth, the ideal, so to speak. And the second one, you see that he sinned, that Adam sinned, and he was punished, and there were changes made. That's alterations that God made in order to enable the creation to continue, but not even though it's on the absolute level. The absolute level would have been these types of existence and vision in Gan Eden. But that's called Midat HaRachman, that God adjusts the situation to enable Adam, even though his existence is not on the highest possible level. That's Rachman. Now here, it's not the same idea, but maybe you know, parallel on a certain level, is that to understand creation, there is the blueprint, there's the ideal. Now the ideal is telling us really would have been Osa-free. So what's the pshat that the earth rebelled? It means to say, it's telling you that certain things are the way they are, not necessarily reflecting the ideal, but simply because the world is constructed from matter. And matter has certain inherent limitations. And it was the will of the Creator that the earth should be formed from matter. And that's, I can't go much further than this. That's basically, it's not a rebellion. That's a metaphor. Rashi is depicting it as though it rebelled. Meaning to say it refused to bring forth. Obviously, if it had the capacity, it would have done it. It means to say that that's just an idea, that there are two ideas over here. And things are the way they are, not necessarily because it's the ideal, but it's the ideal in conjunction with a certain practical limitation. And that's the way he explained it. You find that, again, I'm just saying this by way of maybe a little parallel, maybe illustration. It's not the same idea, but you see, for example, in Ayin Tachazayin, in Shemot, that if a person injures another person, so it's whatever he did to the other person, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and so on and so forth. Now, you learn the Gemara, you'll see that it's not the case, that it's mamon. Ayin Tachazayin is mamon. You don't take out a person's eye. If somebody takes out another person's eye, you don't take out his eye. He has to pay the mamon, and then the whole Gemara, and how do you evaluate the worth of the eye? So, of course, anyone who maintains that this was a later development, that originally they did take out an eye for an eye, but then the Chachamim changed it, that's Sphira. That's Sphira. So this goes back to Sinai. This is the Torah Shebaal Peh. That there never was a Bezin in Jewish history that ever learned Pshat, that an eye in Tachas, an eye in Mamash. So then, of course, the question arises, so what's the point? If the Torah doesn't mean it, so why is it really saying, I ain't talking Zion? Should have said money, talking Zion. So the Rav one time explained that no, that I ain't talking Zion is true. And that's an idea, it's an ideal, even though, practically speaking, it's not implemented. It means to say that in terms of ultimate justice, that's the way it ought to be. That it ought to be, I ain't talking Zion. And ultimate justice is when a person injures somebody else, they negate the feelings, the worth of the other person, then the only correct justice would demand that he experience the same thing himself. That's the ideal. That's true justice. He has to experience what he thought to the harm that he thought to do to somebody else. He has to experience it himself. However, so if that's the case, so why don't we do it? Because practically speaking, the way Adam is structured and everything else, it wouldn't work. It's an impossibility. So therefore, the closest you can come to it is through the money. But again, a person shouldn't think that when he's paying money, that the punishment for taking out an eye is money. It's not. It's really the eye, and the money is simply the vehicle, which is, so to speak, ransoming his own eye. You see that there's an ideal, that the Torah is stating, although it's not the same thing, it's a different realm, but the reality is the result of the ideal, and then the limitations on the ideal in terms of the practical. Here, it's saying that with regard to Masa Bereshit, that idea is, the Torah contains both ideas. That really, hello?
Yep.
Yeah, that really the ideal would have been a free, but there are certain inherent limitations that are due to the phenomenon of matter, that's the way matter is constructed. That, I think, is a very good explanation of what that Rashi is saying. In the case of the second case, I don't know, I have to think about it some more. Okay?
Okay.
All right, any questions?